First bus. Okay, so we got arrested. They put us on the bus. They put us in plastic handcuffs. They took all our, like, bags and stuff from our pockets and stuck them in plastic bags and made us carry the plastic bags behind us with our handcuffs cuffed, which, like, actually made the handcuffs dig deeper into our skin because of the weight and the, like, awkwardness of it all. And we climbed onto buses. They were, like, converted city buses that were used by the police department. And it was pretty uncomfortable sitting there. And there's one guy in the bus, in my bus, who he's an older guy, probably in his 50s or 60s, who said he was on pain medication for chronic pain, and he only had enough medication to last till 8 o'clock, and he was kind of panicking, and the officers were kind of ignoring him. The officers actually threatened to have him restrained because he was panicking, which didn't really help his panic so much. So anyway, that we worked together to calm him down. Everybody on the bus started singing songs and stuff, and then we rode over to Pier 57, mm-hmm. which is this giant warehouse space that the city rented out. It used to be a bus depot, and so the floors are completely covered with this grime from like decades of buses going in and out of there. Some mixture of oil and you know, residue from exhaust and diesel and, you know, all kinds of nastiness. So they're all kind of real slick and gritty and gross. And the air is full of, like, the air just, like, is a little bit thick with dust, you know, when you're in there. And it kind of builds up in your lungs. You start coughing after a little while.
Mm-hmm.
When we got there, it was pretty obvious that the, we were actually pretty much the second bus that was in there, the second load of prisoners to come in that night. And the place was completely disorganized. They had every five people who were arrested were assigned to an arresting officer just sort of at random. That officer didn't actually arrest us or witness us doing the crime, but he was at the scene. And so, like, as they pulled us out of the orange net from the scene of the crime, they just said, this guy's your arresting officer, and we'd have our mugshot taken with him, and he handled us through processing. When we got to the bus depot, our arresting officer was just not there. And he didn't show up for about half an hour to 45 minutes. So we had to stand around while everybody else got processed and had their stuff, had their cuffs taken off and their stuff, their property processed and all that stuff. And they got water and all that stuff. We had to sit completely partitioned off in a separate section waiting for our arresting officer to show up. And one guy in our group of five had to pee really, really, really badly, and the guard wouldn't let him, and so it was kind of a mess. Eventually, our arresting officer finally showed up. They took the guy off to take a leak, and they got us processed. They got the handcuffs off. They put us in a cell. The cells were basically built out of fence material that was about 12 feet tall and then with razor wire on the top.
Mm-hmm.
The cages were divided into two sections, and the front section was sort of like the foyer. It had the bathrooms, two outhouses basically, and a gate, and then the second gate went into the area where there were benches and a water cooler. They gave us each a paper cup to drink water from. So we lined up in there, sat around in the cells for a long time, started networking with each other. We started, there were a lot of great political conversations that cropped up while we were in jail, because this protest really brought a diverse set of people. This protest brought, you know, Kerry Democrats, everything from Kerry Democrats to libertarians to, you know, anarchists to Greens, people of very many different anti-Republican political persuasions. So there's some really great political discussions that happened in there. I think that a lot of the more moderate liberal folks were in the process of becoming radicalized through this whole thing. I think a lot of their illusions were shattered by being arrested and confined in a warehouse out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, not in the middle of nowhere, but as far as we were concerned, it's the middle of nowhere.
Right.
We're, you know, right on the harbor there. So anyway, a lot of that stuff going on. Periodic, we would have to sort of beg for our bathroom breaks, but we would get them periodically. You know, they would never give them really voluntarily. We'd always have to call for them, and they'd always say, like, you got to wait, and we'd have to ask again, and then they'd give it to us. At one point, I suffered a little damage in jail, a very minor injury, but I was going on a bathroom break, and the doors, the gates are kind of free-swinging, and they're pretty heavy, and the guard let go of the gate before I was fully through it. Not really on purpose, but just as sort of an oversight. And the gate slammed into my leg and scratched it up pretty good, which would have been fine, except that later on when I went to sleep on the floor, the grimy, nasty floor, I got that grime kind of ground into the scrape there, and it really stung like crazy for the next 12 hours or so.
How long were you in that facility?
Yeah, we were in that facility for, I think we were in each facility for about 12 hours each. So we were over at Pier 57 for about 12 hours, and in the course of that time, we were transferred between three different cells. I was in three different cells at three different stages of the thing, and we never really knew why we were being transferred or how far along the process we were getting at any given time. We never had an idea of when we would see a lawyer, what we were being charged with. Eventually, we found out we were being charged with disorderly conduct. We were never told when we'd see a lawyer or when we'd have a chance to be arraigned. Eventually, they loaded us onto buses. They handcuffed us again, put us on buses. This time, the bus was this very, like, unsafe prisoner transfer bus, totally caged in the inside with a very narrow entrance that if this bus crashed or caught on fire or whatever, there would be absolutely no way for the prisoners to get out safely. And that was actually kind of shocking to me, given how much attention, at least faux attention to safety that they seem to pay everywhere else. But they brought us over to the Tombs, which is the central booking, I believe. Are we in Brooklyn? Or is this?
This is still Manhattan.
Okay, so it's just, okay, so we're at the central booking. Okay, we're at central booking. That's actually where we are right now. We're sitting outside the building.
Mm-hmm.
The locals call it the Tombs. It's about a 24-story building. And we came in, and first thing that they said was, go up as far as you can go, and that's, you know, up these stairs as far as you can go, and that's where you're going to go in. What they meant was go up, like, two flights of stairs to where the wet paint starts, so you're not supposed to go further, and that's where you go, but several groups actually went up all 24 flights to the roof with their arresting officer, who thought that that's where they needed to go. Their arresting officer tried to open the roof until he was, like, called from below, like, you know, that's not where you're supposed to go. So a lot of people got a long stair climb out of that. Anyway, once we were in there, we got placed in one set of in a room, locked in a room where we were waiting to be searched, and then we were taken to be searched and had our this happened to us four or five times. We had to empty our pockets, spread our legs, get patted down, go through metal detectors, put everything back in our pockets. And the guys that would do the searches were, like, the most hard-ass of the cops. They would be, like, you know, totally on the power trip of ever controlling every minutia of your movements and all this. So then we were put in some other cells, and then we were moved to some other cells, and then we were taken to be fingerprinted and digital photographed, and they were running our fingerprints to check our record. They claimed that the fingerprint check was only an inquiry and not an entry of data, so... this wouldn't create a fingerprint record for us. It would simply pull in any data that already exists under our fingerprints. But they also said, I mean, that's what they said at first, but they also later admitted that this does create a sort of blank entry that associates our name, our contact information with our fingerprints. It won't create a rap sheet. It won't put anything on our file as far as the arrest record goes, but it will have, you know, our fingerprints associated with our name and address if they weren't previously in the master database of fingerprints. That's what happened with that. I don't know what happened with the digital pictures that they took, but they took those too. Then they put us in some more cells, and then they put us in some more cells, and then finally, eventually, after we've been in jail, we've been in somebody's custody somewhere along the line for about 23 hours, they finally took us in to get arraigned. We saw our lawyers about probably 5 minutes before we were taken in to be arraigned. We had a very brief session with the lawyer to talk about our options. The option that I chose, I don't know about the others because they're not out yet, but the option that I chose was this thing called ACD, which is adjourned contemplating dismissal, which means that they're basically setting aside the trial and not... they're not going to try it. They're going to table it, basically, for 6 months. And if I have no other arrests for 6 months,
then it will disappear from my record and the records will be sealed on that case.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be as if it never happened. I was hesitant to take that option at first until I learned that it is possible, even if you take that option, to still sue for wrongful arrest and wrongful imprisonment and, inhumane prison conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that there's going to be class action lawsuits on all three of those issues, the wrongful arrest, wrongful imprisonment, and inhumane prison conditions. And we're going to be looking into that. A lot of the grime from the floor rubbed off on our clothes. And you can hear the folks cheering in the background right now. That's because the number of folks are being released from the court process. Basically, throughout the evening, every 15 minutes or so, about 5 people walk out, which is a pretty slow rate considering that 1,500 people are in or got arrested last night.
Right.
At this rate, it's going to take a really long time for everybody to get out.
Right.
But the other options that were available to us that may or may not have been taken by others were, it turns out, we didn't know this at the time or else we probably would have done it, that a lot of the people who just pled innocent had their charges dismissed by the judge, because
mm-hmm.
the judge basically saw no grounds for the charges that were made against us. So that's certainly how I would have pled if I had known that it would mean that I didn't have to come back to town. The reason I did the ACD is because I believe that would make me have to come back to New York City, which would have been a pain.
Right.
The other options were a desk appearance ticket, which is where you don't even see a judge or a lawyer. They issue you a date to appear in court, and you have to come back by that date, or you get a warrant for your arrest out. And that gives you some time to at least get out of here for now. But it does deny you the chance to get the ACD or just have your case dismissed.
Right.
So those are basically the options that were before us. As far as I know, nobody's been found guilty of these really minor crimes that we were charged with. We were charged with disorderly conduct, which is it's a ticketable offense, not normally an arrestable offense. And it actually said in the computer when they took our fingerprints, it said, this is not a fingerprintable offense, right on the computer screen that took the fingerprints, and then they proceeded to fingerprint us anyway. Yeah, that's basically the story. I got out. I was greeted by a medic team and a legal team. Medic team treated the wound on my leg, the scratch that had filled with the goop. They cleaned it off. They put on some herbal healing salve. And then I talked to the legal people, traded contact information with them, reported that I was out, reported what I knew about the inside, and I actually delivered my my shirt, which was full of the grime from the jail. I delivered that to them, and they're going to run lab tests on it to determine what that grime was made of.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a free, random donated shirt to wear in the meantime.
Great.
So that's pretty much where we're at. We're just sitting around now, waiting for the women to get out and for Arun to return with the car.